Our theme for this month, as we have been putting a theme on every month, and our lessons are centered around those things, our theme for this year is Press On. And our theme for this month is to press on to make my marriage stronger. So this month we'll be talking a lot about marriage. I don't know why we chose this month to talk about marriage. Hint, hint, guys, right? So we chose this to talk about this month to make my marriage stronger. But this morning I want to talk about to make marriage stronger. There's going to be several lessons. There's going to be several lessons about marriage this month. So I will not be the only one talking about this, so prepare thyself, right? But I want to talk about this morning about making marriage as a concept stronger. Making marriage stronger. This is something we can all play a part in. You don't have to be married. You don't have to have any plans in the future to be married. But you can help to make the concept of marriage stronger. This is something we can all play a part in. And I want to focus on this concept this morning. But I want us to focus first and look at just truth. And start there by talking about marriage and talk about truth. Was it safe to say that truth is under attack? That truth is being weaponized, that truth is being used to the ends of the means of many. Truth and things that we thought would never be discussed are being redefined, remolded, and reshaped to the whims and concerns of others, to those who cry the loudest for injustice. But when we can change truth, everything is up in the air, right? If we can change truth, then we have loosed the moorings and we are adrift in whatever just feels good. We're adrift in the whims of others. Truth is no longer this overarching umbrella of things that cannot change. It is now everybody's bubble of truth and what I have accepted it to be true. When truth erodes, it erodes everything. And one thing that's under fire and has been for many years is marriage. But what has gotten us there? What has gotten us to the point that we can change so much? And one of those things is postmodernism. And you've heard it talked about before, postmodernism. The thing that's eroded truth. They say postmodernism can only be described. You can't define postmodernism. You know why? Because if you define postmodernism, then you're putting on it what it won't say for itself. You can't use definite terms and boundaries and absolute truths to define postmodernism. If you're talking with a postmodernist and he said, these things, this is what truth is like, you have to ask them, are you sure? And he has to say no. You know why? Because he can't make any truth statements. I want to say this morning that we're going to be talking about truth. We're going to talk about things that are true. And a lot of times when we start talking about these things, we start to feel a little like maybe uncomfortable because it's not popular to talk about truth. It is not popular to go out and say, this is truth. We have to go to work and not make any truth statements because guess what? Everybody has their own truth. I can't say anything. I have to go to work and I legally can't say something that's true because it's legally binding. I can't say those things. And so this morning, we are free to talk about truth. We are uninhibited to talk about truth. And we are not attacking anybody. We've also got a concept going on that if I say something that's true and it's contrary to somebody else's truth, then I'm attacking that individual. No, we should be able to reason with each other. We should be able just to talk about things and not yell at kids who are wearing hats, right? Can we do that? Can we just talk? And we're going to do that this morning and just talk about truth. And so if you get uncomfortable, I'm sorry, we're just talking about truth. We can do that. I'm not attacking anybody. I'm getting animated. Sorry. But we're not attacking anybody. We're not attacking anybody. We need to be able to talk about things. People want to say that truth is relative, that naturalists have their truth, pantheists have their truth, Christians have their truth, and on into infinity. Everybody has their own truth. And nobody can say anyone is better than the other, and everything is equally valid. Postmodernism argues that people are fundamentally subjective. Everybody's subjective. Everybody's subjective. Because everybody has their own unique beliefs and values, and the way they organized factual, listen, the way they organized, so postmodernist wrote this, it said, the way they organized factual data, what can he not say? Truth. Can't say truth, but I can say factual data. So the way they organized factual data, so everybody has their own narrative, that they have, and they play out in their lives, and construct all their data around that. And so everybody has their own narrative. So a postmodernist can't say truth, they have to say narrative. And so everybody has their own narrative. But postmodernism just questions everything and leaves nothing in its place. Leaves nothing. How do I know that truth is eroding? How do I know that postmodernism is... I'm going to ask a few questions. Is this picture, which one in this picture is boy and which one's girl? Boy or girl? Has truth eroded? Did we ever think we'd be talking about this? This is not... I'm being completely serious. I don't want to be... Did we ever think that we would be talking about if this is a boy or a girl? There are groups now that are promoting that you can start transitioning a child as early as 18 months. That if they're playing with certain toys or doing certain, have certain characteristics, as early as 18 months is healthy to start transitioning a child from the gender that they were born with to a different gender. 18 months, there are people promoting that. Boy or girl? Now, I understand gender dysphoria is a real thing, but it is a minute percentage of people who have that compared to those who are trying to change. And if you had any question about how this is being sold to children, we have the gender unicorn. The gender unicorn, you say? Yes, the gender unicorn. The Trans Student Educational Resources is a youth-led organization dedicated to the transforming and the educational environment of the trans and gender nonconforming students. This is from their website. Through advocacy and empowerment, in addition to our focus on creating a more trans-friendly education system, our mission is to educate the public and teach trans activists how to be effective organizers. We're not only going to say this is what we need to do, but we're going to be activists about it and make sure everybody else accepts it. They say that each of these categories is the concept for gender is different for everybody. This is how they sell it to children. That you can have your gender identity and have a sliding scale on where you are in your gender identity, gender expression, sex assigned at birth, physical attracted to, or emotionally attracted to. All these things are a sliding scale from zero to the moon and back on all of these things. This is what's being sold to children. There are counties in Florida that say, we're all in. We're all in. And they're saying, we're not going to discriminate between sexual orientation, gender, gender expression, gender identity, political beliefs, marital status, or linguistic difference, which they shouldn't. They shouldn't. Should a school system make a difference? If you come, a student comes to school, doesn't matter what they believe, doesn't matter the color of their skin, doesn't matter anything when they come to school to be taught. Should that matter? No, it shouldn't. We should have respect for every living person. That is what matters. They should not have to write something about it to say, well, we're going to do this now. You should have been doing it anyway. But what I have a problem against is their policy specifically says to expand the knowledge, understanding, and awareness of the LGBTQ studies and the LGBTQ social movements. That is wrong. I'm sorry. I don't send my kid to school so you can teach them that. That is math. And the other basic stuff that I might not have done that well in. But other than that, I don't send my school so that you can teach them morals. That's something I take care of in the home. I should not have to unteach my child the weird way of doing math and unteach my child morals, right? I should not have to do that. I should not have to do that. That's when it's wrong. Another decision. Child or choice? Child or choice? Did we ever think that this would be something we'd be talking about? 1973, Roe v. Wade just blew the barn doors wide open on this being an option. Recently, New York is the latest in the state of the states to join the ranks of seven others that already had it as far as abortion up to birth. A columnist in the New York Post wrote an article stating that the abortion debate, New York's new law is about saving lives. Soak that in for just a moment. You want an example of spinning truth? This new law is about saving lives. The fact is, less than 1% of abortions are done to save the mother. Less than 1%. Another fact is that 100% of abortions end life. So how is this about saving lives? I realize this is a delicate issue, but when did we ever think that this was going to be a choice? When did we ever think that a governor, a Virginia governor, Ralph Northam, would talk about and support the Repeal Act that would remove all barriers to abortion, even talking about how it's all right to let a child who's born alive to die, and say people have blown it out of proportion? How did we get here? This is where we are in truth. And so is it any wonder that we need to talk about making marriage strong again? If we can get to this point where we're talking about killing innocent children, mark my words, what's next? What is next? Marriage. Making marriage stronger. We need to stand up for making marriage stronger. We need to pursue the truth of marriage. There's a lot of information out there, a lot of definitions of marriage. People say marriage brings two people together who love each other. Marriage is about being with someone who makes you happy, because if it makes you happy, it can't be that bad, right? A marriage certificate is just a piece of paper. Some other information, false information about marriage, is just a piece of paper. It means nothing. Actually, science says otherwise. Marriage has changed over the years. It used to be about property rights. Now it's about love. And the Supreme Court weighed in 2015, said that marriage is about certain personal choices central to individual dignity and autonomy, including intimate choices that define personal identity and beliefs. It's very romantic. We expect nothing less from the government, right? There's a lot of people talking about what marriage is. But if we continue to redefine marriage, we will redefine it out of existence. And our entire society will be harmed. And that harm will be distributed. David Tubbs wrote in the City Journal, he said, if we redefine marriage, we're defining it out of existence. And those that will suffer for it most will be women and children. In this libertine utopia of sexual freedom, it will be the women and children that suffer most when we change completely marriage. Society is based on marriage. When God decided to establish mankind, did He set up a legislature system, some type of government? When He asked man to populate the earth, to subdue the earth, when He asked man to do that, what did He give man? Marriage. Which speaks to the strength of marriage. We talk about, they talk about marriage as though it's some weak institution, but God set it up as something that would conquer the globe. Marriage and everything is based, and our society is based on marriage. If we pursue truth, we need to look to God's Word about the definition of marriage, as was read this morning. Matthew 19, verses 4 through 6, He answered them. Questions were being asked about divorce. And he was being asked questions about marriage. As we read earlier, this passage, Jesus responds to what marriage is, and we're going to break this down piece by piece and look at it. He says, have you not read? Have you not read? There is authoritative teaching on marriage. He who created them, the supreme authority, God, from the beginning, it is not cultural. Nobody can say, well, marriage is cultural. In this culture, they do marriage this way, and in this culture, they do marriage this way. It's a cultural environment. It's always changing. And we'll mention some of that in just a moment, but not what the Bible teaches. Jesus says, from the beginning. So when he says this, it transcends culture. Now, does the Bible ever, anywhere in the Bible, say this is how you're supposed to get married? This, you're supposed to walk, every church building is supposed to have a center aisle so you can walk down and have, and does it say that? No, it does not, obviously. It doesn't give us, so there's where some cultural, the logistics, but marriage in and of itself is defined. Marriage is defined. He made them male and female. Those are the two that can be married. Male and female can be married. Only two genders. And he goes on to say, because of this, for this reason, because of the previously mentioned information, for this reason, and here's the definition of marriage, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. Here is a biblical definition of marriage. This is what we should have as marriage. When the government said, no, this is what marriage is, all the states that had said marriage is between a man and a woman, all the states, all that was undone. When the federal government stepped in and said, this is what marriage is, even though states have said we are protecting marriage between a man and a woman, the federal government said, no, you can't do that, and it annulled what the states had done. The federal government stepped in and said, marriage is something different, but God has said this is what marriage is, and we will not change our concept, we will not change our teaching on what marriage is. Wherefore, God has joined together, let no man separate. It is God ordained and binding. And binding. This is what marriage is. This is a proper concept of marriage between a man and a woman, between two that have come together and they leave father and mother and come together to make one union, one, and raise up children under that environment. If we're going to make marriage stronger, we need to make sure that we're preserving the truth. We need to make sure we are preserving the truth. There's one who wrote, David Wright wrote, a columnist, about, is marriage an outdated tradition? And he says, we all know there's no perfect relationship out there, but if marriage doesn't serve us any, you anymore, what's the point of being in it? Because you took some vows and you were created that were created years ago and people were dying at young ages. He's espousing this concept that marriage needs to be redefined and our concept of marriage needs to be changed because we're living longer. We're living longer. And so during that time, I grow up and I change who I am, and who I was when I was 20 was different than who I am when I'm 40 and when I'm 60. And because of those changes, we need to be able to just, you know, change marriage. How long did Adam live? How long was he married to Eve? That does not make a change. He says it's perfectly acceptable and okay in a relationship to leave it and go on to the next one and grow and evolve. We're going to grow and evolve in our relationships. He says we need to refine what marriage is. I think it's important. We need to listen, not listen to church or religion anymore. We need to listen to the way the world is and grow. That's marriage. That's a popular construct of marriage, that it is just this outdated entity that needs to be changed, needs to be updated every 100 years or so, and we can make things better. That is not what the Bible would have to say. Alexis de Tocqueville is probably not somebody you know about. He was a French diplomat, a political scientist in the early 1800s. His famous work was The Democracy in America. He was studying democracy because he was over in France, and they had this revolt and against aristocracy, and he was studying this new thing of democracy over in the States, and he says, society is endangered not by the great licentiousness of a few, but by the laxity of morals amongst all. I think God said somewhere, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. But he goes on to say that there is no just ground or surprise if a man who is in the age of aristocracy chooses to consult nothing but his own opinion and his own taste in the choice of a wife, and soon finds that the infractions of morality and domestic wretchedness invade his household. But when the same line of action is in the natural, ordinary course of things, when it is, here's what he's saying, when it is sanctioned by parental authority and backed by public opinion, it cannot be doubted that internal peace of families will be increased by it. What is he saying? He's saying when we teach children what real marriage is, when parents say this is what marriage is, and when society backs it up, marriage is going to be better for it. This was written back in the 1800s. Has there been any changes to marriage? So we need to make sure children need to be taught about biblical marriage. That needs something that needs to be talked about. As uncomfortable it is for some kids to even think about that construct, that needs to be taught, right? It needs to be taught at the appropriate levels for children. Proverbs chapter 22, verses 5 and 6. We might know verse 6, but thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. He who guards himself will be far from them. And in that immediate context, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. When we train up a child in the way he should go, it is not just in how you walk, how you order your life, but marriage needs to be a part of that. Proper marriage needs to be a part of that. As we continue looking at training up children, we need to make sure that we're doing all we can to protect our own marriages. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 2 and 3. With all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing tolerance for one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. This particular passage was written in the context in the construct of the church. But could this also not be used in the family, in the home? If we're all working and we're all humble and gentle and patient and showing tolerance and working for one another in love, will that not help our marriages? And there'll be a lot more said about this, obviously, in this month. Also in Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 is a great passage. Whenever we go and teach what it means to walk as a Christian, what it means to live as a Christian, this is one of my go-to passages, Colossians chapter 3. Because it highlights so much things that we as individuals need to have in our lives. These things need to be in our lives, should be in our lives. But you also know, put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. So here's the things we need to put away. The old man. And be renewed in the spirit of our minds. Be renewed as to who we are. Renewed in our concept. Renewed in our image by the one who created us. Again, going back to that authority of God being the authority in how we order our lives. So as those who have been chosen by God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another, and forgiving each other. For whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. If our marriages were used these principles, do you think that would be a good thing? Now, this works in any interaction with another human being, this works. What's interesting is this passage goes on to talk about how to apply this in marriage, how to apply this with your children, how to apply this in the workplace. So you can see how this is a great passage when we talk about what it means to live as a Christian, put off these things, put on these things, and then apply them in marriage, in the home, in the workplace, and in all these areas. These things need to be applied. We should be exemplary in all things, and marriage is no exception. Marriage should be no exception. As we strive to pursue and preserve the truth, we need to make sure that our actions are doing that as well, and our marriages are doing that. We need to make sure that we are promoting the truth. There's a lot of lies out there about marriage, right? There's a lot of lies about marriages. If you're not happy, don't stay in an unhappy situation. You deserve to be happy. That's a very common lie. Divorce is always an option. It's, you know, you get married, and if a few years down the road it's not working out, divorce is always an option. Another one is you may have just fallen out of love because, you know, you fell into it. You can fall out of it, right? As though it was like a, I don't even know how that works, but if you can fall into it, you can fall out of it. If you fell into love, you might not know what love really is. Just saying, okay? But marriage provides a foundation for the family, and the family is fundamental building block of all human civilizations. Marriage unites husband and wife, and marriage unites parents with children as they have them, and they set the next generation in motion. We make sure that we are promoting truth about marriage. We need to model proper marriages. If we're promoting truth, we need to model proper marriages. We need to watch what we say and what we do. It was spoken of one of the disciples, you're one of Jesus' disciples. And he's like, no, I'm not. Remember Peter at the fire? No, I'm not. Your language betrays you. Does our language betray us in how we talk about marriage? Do we ever get caught up in some of the same jokes in front of our children about what marriage is or is not? And we become the mouth where we begin to say some of those things, those false concepts about marriage. We need to also show how to love. How to love. Healthy love needs to be exampled in the marriage and to our children. They're getting all kind of examples out in the world about what marriage is, ideas about what marriage is, ideas about what love is. Is completely corrupt. We must, in our homes, model what love looks like, what respect looks like, what it means to be married. We need to model how to resolve conflict. No amen on that one. So we need to resolve how to... I was waiting, brother. We need to learn to resolve conflict. Has there ever been conflict in marriage? Yes. Where two or three are gathered, there's going to be conflict, right? We have differences of opinions on things. But we need to model how to resolve marriage. Resolve conflict in marriage. The truth. So be careful on that one. Resolve conflict in marriage. There's a healthy way of doing that. Would it be any surprise to you the Bible gives us a healthy conflict resolution model? That if you have aught with somebody, maybe I should go and talk to that individual. Wow. That would be great. We also need to make sure that we are raising children. How we raise children should be done and promoted and modeled in marriage. How we maintain the home should be modeled in marriage. And the roles of man and woman in marriage should be taught as well. Every home does things different, right? Everybody, in my family, we grew up kind of, the garage was dad's domain, right? Except for when mom needed to store stuff, then mom could put it in the garage. But other than that, it was dad's domain. The garage outside, but we were raised to take care of all things. My mom once said, quite prophetically, that maybe you get married someday, as though she questioned whether that was going to happen, and you get married to somebody who doesn't know how to do the dishes, or does not know how to do the laundry, or does not know how to cook, and so I'm training you to be good in all things. Kara can do all those things. That's not questioning that. Just in case you're wondering. But every family does things differently, but we need to make sure that we're teaching what proper roles are. What healthy roles are. There's a lot of talk nowadays about masculinity versus toxic masculinity. And I will say I am against, and the Bible is against, and God is against over-sexualizations, if I can talk, any of those things that would be harmful and contrary to what being a real man is. But being a real man means I follow after God. If I wanted a model for a real man, could I not look to King David? Here's a man who went to war, did things that were hard, but came home and sang praises of God who gave him the victory. We need to make sure that we're showing what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman in marriage. And all those things are being talked about in the home. If we're going to promote marriage... We're going to finish with the top 10 in promoting truth. The University of Chicago scholar Linda Waite compiled scientific evidence about the benefits of being married, the benefits of adults in marriage. And so this is science. We love science, right? Science. And so the City Journal, one compiled all this together and gave us a top 10. Number 10, it is safer. Marriage is safer. Marriage lowers the risk that both men and women will become victims of violence, even including domestic violence. Marriage is safer. This is what science says, what the stats say. It can save your life. I know that has been the case for me. Married people can live longer and healthier lives. It can save your kids' life as well. Number 7, you will earn more money. And number 6, you will manage your money better. Married people will be able to manage, not only make more money, but manage those things. Because sometimes, you know, we make decisions, I need this right now, right? And maybe somebody else in the marriage says, no, you don't need that, right? So you can manage money better. Here's one. There's more faithfulness in marriage. You know those people that are out there saying, well, you know, what is a piece of paper? We can live together. What does a piece of paper mean? Well, apparently to science, that piece of paper means you're going to be more faithful. Those who actually are married, have a marriage certificate, are far more likely to be faithful than those who are not. Here's one some of us might need. Number 4, improved mental health. That was nothing. Number 3. It will make you happy. Married people enjoy more happiness than those who are not, according to science. I'm not saying you can't be happy without marriage, but it's saying you can be more happy in marriage. Number 2, your kids will love you more. Divorce weakens the bonds between parents. And number 1, the marriage bed is better, despite what the movie says. I'm going to leave it there. So if we want to make marriage stronger, we need to make sure that we're pursuing the truth about marriage and that we're promoting and preserving the truth of marriage. These things should be something we are about. We should stand up and say, no, that is not what real marriage is. No, that is not. Let us discuss marriage and let us discuss what science says about marriage and the statistics say about marriage and what history has said about marriage and, more importantly, what God has said about marriage. Marriage needs to be protected, and we need to be among those who are most prominent in protecting it. Truth is changing in so many ways. I am honestly afraid of the things that our children are going to be going through in the future. Are we preparing them for the great changes that are coming down the pike? Are we preparing them for that they will have healthy, strong marriages, despite what the world around them is saying? Will they have strong, healthy marriages? This morning has been a discussion of truth. And while we discuss truth, we seek to look to God's authority on all things. There was a man in Acts chapter 8 who was studying God's word and wondered about the truth that was written there. He said, who does this prophet talk about, himself or some other? And Philip taught him from the beginning passage in Isaiah chapter 53. They went on the way discussing, the text says, he taught him Jesus. We don't know the lesson, but we can surmise the lesson that was taught, because at the end of that discussion, the eunuch said, here is water, what hinders me from being baptized? When truth is taught, when Jesus is taught, baptism is taught. He says, what hinders me from being baptized? And he says, if you believe with all your heart, Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. He said, I do believe. And they went down, both of them, into the water and were baptized that same hour. This morning has been a discussion of truth. If you want the truth on how to be a follower and child of God, we can open up the Bible together and look at what the Bible has taught about coming to Him and believing that He is. We have to have faith that He is a rewarder of those that diligently seek Him. We have to seek after Him. You have to repent, turn away from sins, Acts 2, verse 38, and being baptized after making confession that Jesus Christ is the Lord and Savior, as this eunuch did, and putting Christ on a baptism. You can make that decision this morning and follow after God if you need to make that decision. If there are things that are going on in your life that you need the prayers of the church, if you need to come and make a life change in your life, please do so now as we stand and as we sing.